National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Dan Burke talks with William May of Catholics for the Common Good about how to better communicate our values about marriage in the public square. In our second half, Dan talks with Joshua Mercer of Catholic Vote about the top myths that confuse Catholics regarding their vote this coming election. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN, the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Dan Burke, Executive Director for the Register.
Great to be with you, Tom.
And you, my friend. Bill May is author of the book, Getting the Marriage Conversation Right, A Guide for Effective Dialogue. He's also the executive director of Catholics for the Common Good. Welcome to Register Radio, Bill.
It's good to be with you.
Bill, you and the Catholics for the Common Good are working hard to frame the importance of a two-parent family as the foundation of a healthy society. And, of course, this is easier said than done. Why don't we start with the key challenges you face when seeking to influence a secular culture regarding the value of traditional family structure?
Well, this is a job for everyone. And, of course, the role of the laity and the mission of the church is organization of secular society. And when one looks at what has happened to marriage over the last 30, 40 years, we're in terrible shape. Since 1980, the marriage rate has dropped by 45%. There's been a tremendous increase of children living in poverty. We have the consequences of fatherlessness. And what's the answer to that today? The answer is to redefine marriage in a way to eliminate the only institution that unites kids with their moms and dads, and eliminate the possibility of promoting and reversing this downward trend. You know, it's really interesting. There are a lot of programs, there's a lot of charities that are focused on dealing with the consequences of marriage breakdown. But there is no constituency today for really promoting men and women marrying before having children. In fact, increasingly, that's being seen as discriminatory.
So how do we change course? I mean, certainly in your book, Getting the Marriage Conversation Right, you argue for a particular approach to dialogue. So how is it that we carry that dialogue into the public square and influence people back to the right path?
Well, the book is based on research and Catholic social doctrine. The church has all the answers. One of the big problems today is marriage has been redefined in the minds of the majority of people. Actually, 58% think that marriage is nothing more than the public recognition of a committed relationship between loving adults. If that's all marriage is, it's pretty hard to make an argument that it should only be between a man and a woman. So really, we've been looking for ways to express what marriage is that's compatible with the catechism, that people can understand. And, Pope Benedict said in Caritas in Veritate, without truth, charity generates the sentimentality. A culture without truth, love falls prey to subjective emotions and opinions. And that's where we are on the definition of marriage today. So looking at the catechism, marriage is an intimate community of life and love. Vocation to marriage is written in the very nature of man and woman as they come from the Creator's hands, not purely a human institution. There's some sense of the greatness of that marital union that exists in all cultures. So we turn to Blessed John Paul II in looking at marriage as a communion of man and woman leading to a communion of child. The reality of marriage is that it unites a man and a woman with each other and any children born from the union. That's what marriage is. That's what it does. Marriage unites a man and a woman with each other and any children born from the union. Then when you can compare the two different understandings of marriage, you can see the difference. You can see the public interest. If marriage is only the public recognition of a committed relationship, where's the public interest in that?
Right. I mean, you could essentially have a dog in a woman or a dog in a man in that sense.
Precisely. Another thing is people don't realize that the term same-sex marriage obscures the fact that really what is being proposed is eliminating man and woman from the law on marriage. And when that happens, it eliminates the only institution we have in society that unites kids with their moms and dads.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we have Mr. Bill May, the author of Getting the Marriage Conversation Right, A Guide for Effective Dialogue, and we're talking about how to best frame this entire discussion so that we can make progress in the culture and rebuilding the importance of marriage as the foundational unit of society. Bill, why don't we shift to the best and worst ways to frame this discussion? What might be helpful is to start with the worst, ways that we should not talk about the marriage issue, and why should we not do that?
Well, ironically, when we think of the marriage issue, we think of the term same-sex marriage. That really is kind of a trap in a way, because it's kind of like the word or the term pro-choice in the abortion. Same-sex marriage implies participation of same-sex couples in marriage. So when we're against same-sex marriage, we're against gays and gay participation. But in reality, what is happening is marriage is being redefined to eliminate, move from the law, any institution whatsoever that unites kids with their moms and dads. So really, the way we recommend approaching it is we're not focused on same-sex marriage. We're focused on redefining marriage to accommodate same-sex couples. There's a big difference there. Actually, when we argue this, it has nothing to do with homosexuality. People have that on their mind, and they try to define marriage in terms of homosexuality. Why can't a homosexual couple marry? And things like that has nothing to do with it. The question is, do we need an institution that unites kids with their moms and dads? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, that's marriage between a man and a woman. If it's no, then why not?
Right. So tell me a little bit about the ways that you've heard Catholics with good intentions arguing this in specific. So in general, we don't want to frame it as anti-homosexual as the foundational argument. But is that the crux of how it's improperly argued?
Well, really, this is more than just trying to memorize rhetoric and think of strategy. It's really what we found when we did focus groups and workshops is that people who are well-catechized Catholics didn't have the capacity to explain what marriage is in secular terms. And they would use the language of the culture. We're all products of the culture. We have to have the humility to recognize that. So what we did, the huge breakthrough, is we started looking at marriage through the eyes of the child. When we do that, we see reality, because we have all kinds of adult influences on us, cultural influences on us. You know, if you think of the scriptural verse when our Lord was praying to the Father and saying, although you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, you have revealed them to the childlike. So really we need to become the child. And we all know what marriage is when we turn to our own experience and the desire we have for connection with our mom and dad, the man and woman we originated from. That's a common experience. We know this. We know God's plan for creation, but it doesn't depend on believing in God. And really from that, we, as the church teaches, every child has a fundamental human right to be born into a real family with a mother and father united in marriage. Our mother and father is part of our identity, part of who we are. And so we've been arguing and looking at marriage from the perspective of adults. We have to become the child.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're with Bill May talking about his new book, Getting the Marriage Conversation Right. Bill, in your book, you talk a bit about promoting marriage as an imperative of social justice. Could you dig into that a little bit for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And, first of all, social justice starts at home. Nobody wants their kids to grow up and form families without the foundation of marriage. No one wants their grandchildren to be brought up in a family without a dad or without a married mom and dad. But more and more, the influences of the culture are undermining and obscuring the reality of what marriage is. Sociologists have observed that marriage has been redefined in the minds of people. It used to be the institutional model. Now they describe it as a soulmate model. it's the marriage is adult centric and that for the benefit of the adults. It's been obscured partially by no fault divorce, where it's been redefined as an institution that's valid as long as both adults are happy. There's a number of other reasons discussed in the book why marriage has been redefined. So really, what we need to do is help to educate, inform Catholics and others on the reality of marriage, what marriage is, and the imperative of explaining that and what love is to our children around the family dinner table. Also, we have to reverse the breakdown of marriage. We need to be advocating for programs that encourage men and women to marry before having children. And what are they doing in schools now? What are they doing on TV? They're promoting families that are quote-unquote alternative families as role models, and these are families where kids are deprived of having a married mother and father. That's the new normal on TV. We have to mobilize and educate ourselves and come together and start advocating for rebuilding a marriage culture.
This is Tom Price, Bill. That's a great point. I was speaking to our son, who's 21 last night, and he said out of all of his friends and everybody that he currently hangs out with, our family is the only one that's intact with a mother and a father.
That's happening more and more and more. But even young people don't want that for themselves and for their kids. There's a poll that's been done year after year that shows 80% of high school senior girls and 70% of high school senior boys desire marriage. And that has been flat. But the marriage rate has been dropping. Now, we don't have enough time to go into the reasons why. We cover that to some extent in the book. But that is something that everybody needs to be aware of so that we can talk to our kids in ways that they focus on the kinds of things that are going to lead to the relationships that form a healthy image
down the road. And Bill, we're grateful for the work that you're doing on this front. If you could tell our listeners how to get a hold of the book, Getting the Marriage Conversation Right, published by Emmaus Road Publishing, a fine publisher. Where can they get a hold of that? On Emmaus' website, also with you as well?
Yes, they can get it on Emmaus' website, Emmaus Road Publishing, or they can buy it on Amazon, Amazon.com. Getting the Marriage Conversation Right, a Guide to Effective Dialogue.
Well, Bill, we're grateful that you were on with us today to help us understand this important issue, and we're all working and praying and fighting to get this right.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the book has come along at a wonderful time, and it is a very aptly titled book. I think the conversation, the calling it Getting the Marriage Conversation Right, is very non-threatening, and hopefully that'll help a lot of people. Thank you, Bill.
It's good being with you.
Thank you. When we return, what can confuse the Catholic voter? We're going to get into that with Joshua Mercer on Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. Dan, I don't know if you heard about this. There's actually an election coming up. Are you aware of this?
An election?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Voting?
Yeah.
Course of the country, that sort of election?
Dan is right on top of things as executive director of the Register, so kidding around here. Joshua Mercer is our next guest. He is executive director of CatholicVote.org. Josh also serves on the board of Students for Life of America. Before he co-founded Catholic Vote, Mr. Mercer was the Washington correspondent for the National Catholic Register. There you go. He lives in Michigan with his wife and five children. Josh, welcome to Register Radio.
Well, glad to be here, and I can tell you, even though I am in Michigan, I'm in the Toledo, Ohio media market, so I can absolutely verify there's the presidential election going on.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, the commercials is just one after another.
Well, here in Alabama, we're kind of shielded from all that because, you know, this state is not in play, but your state certainly is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ohio is very much in play, which is, I'm only about 18 miles from there, and Michigan itself is possibly as well. I mean, it's not as much. I mean, everything is probably going to come down to Ohio. And, I mean, in the discussion about the Catholic vote, there's a lot of Catholics across the country that get very frustrated about it. And I just like to try to help people understand exactly what's going on because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that try to cause confusion. And I think we just really need to dial down and try to figure out what exactly is going on when we speak about the Catholic vote, not my organization, but Catholics who vote in this country. And, there's a lot more that meets the eye at first glance.
I agree, Josh, and that's exactly why we had you on. Why don't we just dive right in? I'd like to talk about the top myths that seem to be rolling around in the minds of many Catholics that might muddy the waters with respect to how they should understand how to cast their vote, what are the most important issues, the least important, that sort of thing. Could we, why don't we hit, if you could just run down the list and then we'll attack them one by one.
I mean, there's some of these myths are promulgated by the media, maybe intentionally or maybe not. Some of these myths are held by people who are even care about the pro-life issue a lot, and it's not because out of a distortion. I think it's just there's some confusion out there. And the first one I'd like to attack, and I think most people are starting to understand this one, the Catholic vote is not monolithic. I mean, John Kennedy won about 80% of the Catholic vote in 1960. Obviously, that's not a surprise. The first Catholic president of the United States. So the Catholic vote itself is not monolithic like it was in 1960, and it's certainly not anymore. Culturally, we as a church, Catholics in this country are a lot different than we were in 1960 as well. I mean, we all know that. I'd like to say that the Catholic vote, you're really talking about three different groups, three different segments. You have church active Catholics, people who go to church every week. They are, amongst these Catholics, they're disproportionately will support pro-life and pro-family Catholics. That's sort of natural, although it's not 100%. But they tend to vote in line with their values. There are exceptions, of course, to this. Then you have people who were born Catholic, you know, they're cradle Catholics, but in many ways they're culturally secular. They might only go to Mass for Christmas or Easter, and I actually think of Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. The only reason she goes to Mass is if there's a wedding or a funeral or something like that. But if you ask her, are you Catholic, she'll say yes, but in just about every way she's secular. And there's a lot of voters like that in this country, so when a pollster calls up and says, are you Catholic? They say yes, but, you know, they don't really walk through the halls of church that much. So that can lead to a lot of confusion on polling. Then the third segment of the Catholic vote are true independent Catholic voters. I mean, when you ask them, they tend, they tend to be pro-life. They tend to favor marriage, but they're not really, they don't want to feel like they're imposing their values on somebody. And
soft Catholicism.
Speak to these people in a way to say, look, it's not trying to force other people how they live their lives. We need to defend children from abortion. We should try to stop this act. We should also make sure that children have a mother and a father. And you start speaking to them in those terms, and then they come around to the pro-life, pro-family position. So that's one of the biggest myths out there. It's not monolithic, and you need to understand that.
This is Dan Burke. We're with Josh Mercer, the executive director of Catholic Vote. We're talking through the myths that muddy the waters for Catholics when it comes to this important election, deciding how they should vote. So the first myth was that the Catholic vote is monolithic, and you covered three segments: the church active pro-lifers, cradle Catholics who are secular, basically, and then the ones in the middle. And it sounds like that the two out of the three are probably highly, or at least the ones in the middle are highly influenceable, and will go either to the pro-life way or the secular way, depending on how their peers influence them, wouldn't you say?
Well, exactly. It depends on, you know, it depends on the grassroots activists out in the field, how hard they're working. It depends on if the candidates themselves who have these positions will stand up and defend them and promote them. There's lots of different things at play here. Also, if the other side, the pro-abortion side, tries to spread confusion and lies, that can obviously certainly muddy the water. But see, this gets to the other myth, though. Some people say, well, okay, so these undecided Catholic voters, this third segment I talked about.
Yeah.
Well, Josh, they're no different. That's what they would say. They're no different than the rest of the undecided vote. And that is not true. That is another myth. Yes, undecided or swing voters, you know, they voted for George W. Bush, but then they also voted for Barack Obama. They go either way when it comes to their vote. But that doesn't mean they're just like every other, because there are a lot of Americans who are undecided. And so my point is, again, if you try to speak to them in terms of marriage and on life, again, I get to this point, it has to be language that's done and understood that you really are fighting for, you know, justice or stuff like that. You're not trying to, it's not about judgmentalism, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people who, a lot of Catholics, swing Catholics, would just kind of blanch at more of a, I don't know if you want to call it a Southern Baptist. I'm not trying to be stereotypical here, but they just look at that like, well, it just seems like you're judging people for being sinners, and I'm not for that.
Yeah, they don't want to be in your face about
the
issues.
They certainly don't. I mean, yeah. In other words, you got to speak to the truth and how being pro-life is the one that's, you know, the most compassionate for, obviously, for the children, of course, but also for the mothers. And so, again, it really, but if you speak to them in those kind of terms, and if you notice, one of the Weekly Standard writer Joseph Bottom and I go back and forth on this on this question. He tends to be a little bit more pessimistic. I tend to be a little bit more enthusiastic about the possibility of this vote being different. And we go back and forth about this a lot. And he said, "Well, I'll admit the debate over the HHS mandate definitely shows a possibility that these kind of independent Catholic voters are distinguishable and they are different because." All the polling seems to indicate that the more we talk about the HHS mandate, the more it gets these independent Catholic swing voters to say, you know what, I'm going to vote for a candidate that will defend the church against this attack on religious liberty.
Interesting.
This election cycle, that is the number one thing that's crossing over Catholic independent voters.
And I would suspect that the bishop standing in solidarity really probably influences this segment as well, don't they?
It does, because I think independent Catholic swing voters understand and appreciate the fact that for the last 20, 30 years, the U.S. bishops have not, you could not label them as diehard partisans of one party or the other. You know, they tend to support Democrats when it comes to economic policies, they support Republicans when it comes to pro-life policies, but they've always been very careful to not say, vote for so-and-so. They never do that. And in fact, I would never want the bishops to do that. I don't think it's their place. I think it's for the laity, groups like mine, to educate voters. The bishops, they teach, they lead, but they don't endorse candidates. We don't want that.
Yeah.
But the fact is, though, no one would be able to say, oh, well, the bishops just automatically support one party, you know, the Republican Party for the last 30 years. That's definitely not true. So when the bishops came up this summer with the Fortnight for Freedom and said, this is an important issue and this is why, a lot of these independent Catholic swing voters were willing to listen to them because they said, you know what? They honestly must be saying this because they truly believe this to be a threat.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, Joshua, we're coming down to the end of the show here. Why don't you tell us a bit about how to find out more? How can we better inform ourselves and particularly those around us? Because I think a lot of our listeners are going to fall into that church active pro-lifer group, and we need to help those who are open in the middle swing our way Tell us what we can do to make that happen.
We all want to make sure that all the Catholic voters out there are aware of where the major party candidates stand on life and marriage. And that actually gets to my last myth. In other words, people just assume that everyone knows where everyone stands on life, on marriage, on religious liberty. And that's not the case. I mean, you know, if you're advertising for Coca-Cola or Sony's pushing out its latest movie, you see those ads all the time. But when it comes to abortion, the media never likes to talk about it unless it embarrasses pro-lifers. And so the fact is, when it comes to these issues like life, liberty, and marriage, I encourage all your listeners to go to CatholicVote.org. We have a lot of materials. We have a lot of great videos you can share. There's stuff that, you know, we've obviously made our decision in terms of endorsing a candidate. I'm not going to get into that here. But we have other stuff that's nonpartisan as well. So just explain the issue of what religious liberty is about, what subsidiarity and pro-life issue is. I just encourage people to go to CatholicVote.org and get the message out there. You can't assume that people know where the candidates stand on life and on marriage and religious liberty. These are important issues, and we need to make sure that our brothers and sisters in the faith understand what's at stake.
Well, Josh, I really want to thank you for your hard work and for explaining all this. It's certainly a critical time. I was on your website just yesterday in preparation for the show. It is fantastic. You've done a fantastic job. Thanks for joining us today on Register Radio.
Well, thanks so much, and what a blessing that the Register continues to be, and I'm very proud to have been associated with the Register.
Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Executive Director there of CatholicVote.org. And thank you, Dan. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week on Register Radio. For Dan Burke and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.